are, I think, well, I don't know, is this on? Okay, thanks. So we are starting Parak Gimel. Right? Last time, before Yom Tov, we went through the discussion about conquest in Israel and ethnic cleansing, and that was really just to set the stage. But here, we're going to see, over a period of two Parakim, the crossing of the Yarden. The Jews going from east to west, keep that in mind, because we're going to talk about the eastern side and the western side, and if you're not oriented to that, you get completely lost. But there, for a simple river passage, there is a lot going on. Obviously, there's the miracle of the stopping of the water, where the water halts, and we know that the river dries up, that's fine. But in addition, there's a lot going on between God and Yahushua, between Yahushua and the nation, who gives what instructions, how they're done, what Yahushua does according to instruction, and what he invents on his own. There's an awful lot going on here. If you see the top of the sheet, you'll see I gave you just a basic structure of how it plays out across the two Parakim, because it's really kind of confusing. I know just the first few times that I read through this, I really couldn't understand what was going on, and so I wrote this out for myself. But take a quick look at the outline. It's going to move from the 9th of Nisan and basic instructions that the officers, who we'll have to talk about, give to the nation, and that Yahushua gives to the nation as well. Then, the 10th of Nisan, Yahushua gets the Kohanim to start going. They're going to carry the Aron, as we'll see. Yahushua then marshals the nation. They come up to the Yarden splits, the people cross, and that's it for chapter 3 for Parak Gimel. Then in the next parak, Hashem instructs Yahushua to set up stones that will be monuments. Yahushua tells the representatives of each Shevet he wants them to take these stones. There end up being two sets of stones, and we have to figure out how that works. That's not simple. The nation then crosses. Yahushua is elevated, meaning that he's given great honor, as we'll see. The Kohanim leave the Yarden. The Yarden returns to flowing as it was. The people camp in a place called Gilgal and set up 12 stones there. And then Yahushua gives a speech to the nation. So the basic thing is fairly straightforward. Once you read it this way, it's, I hope anyway.
The only thing I'm noticing is that they cross twice.
Yeah, where?
You have in chapter 3, 14 to 17, the people cross, and
yep.
Then again, nation crosses in 4, 10 to 14.
Yeah, problem, huh?
Yeah, okay.
So I forgot something.
That's not like I forgot I cut and pasted in two places. No, that's actually an issue.
Okay. Also, was there no Pesach at this point yet, or no?
Pesach is chapter 5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll get to
okay.
We will get
to Pesach.
Close
to Pesach,
because it is
a little
bit
of
Pesach.
What about the 10th of Nisan, 9th of Nisan, 10th of Nisan?
Right.
They don't usually tell you the exact date.
Good. When you get a date in Navi, generally speaking, there's a reason why. So we did Chagai a couple of years ago with the Tuesday class, and like there he tells you the date every single time that there's a message, and each time there's a reason why. There's something that the date is associated with. So here too, the simple explanation of why the date is there is because it's going to orient us in terms of Moshe's death and their entry into Israel. But I think
Moses already died.
Right. But just in terms of knowing when things have happened, because we know that it's after 30 days mm-hmm. from the time Moshe died, and that gives us some perspective. But I think the major reason is because in the next parak, we're going to see Pesach. And so we're learning where they are at this stage. It is kind of funny that you're traveling like this right before Pesach.
Well,
you know,
clean their house for those days. It's easier to just pick up and move, right?
Rabbi Malevsky in one of his connected with Pesach, he was saying, the people used to just the kasher everything like. It was Erev Pesach. They had one pot, which they used all the time, and they kashered it, and then it was Pesach.
Right.
They didn't like it.
They didn't have like
they used the food that they eat that day.
It also seems correct that actually you're supposed to make the matzah on Erev Pesach in the afternoon.
Right.
Wow.
So much so that it's like a halachic question.
I've got too much
interview. They did the sloth matzah. They made it on Erev Pesach.
Oh, but they're making it fresh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Say on Pesach, people could come and see. Like we did, we were there when my father went and he brought it back.
Now they have a soft matzah which they market over the net, but it's frozen and it's supposed to be awful.
Well, the one that he brought, which was fresh, was awful.
Softmatzah.com, believe it or not.
I've never heard that even.
Well, it's really the original matzah, right? Anyone who has ever tried to do koreich knows that matzah isn't supposed to be cardboard. It's supposed to be something soft, like a laffa type of a thing that's going to wrap around it, and you can actually have. I mean, you're supposed to have a carbon Pesach in there.
Yeah.
But the challenge with the one that they do over the net is that you have to freeze it, and once you freeze it, it's already.
Yeah, once it's rough, it's also not very good.
Don't know.
It wasn't very good.
Okay. I thought that fresh would be better. In any case, the themes we're going to see here are the Aron, the Kohanim, and the nation. That's sort of one piece of this, the interplay between them. The role of the miracle, what's it there for, the significance of crossing the Yarden on the whole, and the way this impacts on Yehoshua himself. And so some of the questions that we're going to want to think about more directly is, what is the significance of who says what to the nation? What Yehoshua says, what Hashem says, what the officers say. What is the significance of the fact that the Kohanim are going to be the ones to carry the Aron? As we'll see, that's not normally their job, so that's going to play a role in this. What is the goal of splitting the Yarden? And who's going to get credit for splitting the Yarden? Something that's going to play out through this as well. But we begin with Pasuk Aleph.
So was it possible for them to cross the Yarden at that point without a miracle?
Yes.
It was. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You may recall, Yaakov runs away from Esav, right? And eventually becomes wealthy in the house of Lavan. And then he comes back and he meets Esav. And he says, Ki v'makli, or is it when he's either when he's talking to Esav, or it's when he's talking to Hashem, thanking Hashem for it. He says, "Bakivu makli avarti es hayarden." I crossed the Yarden with just my walking stick.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't have anything special, and the Yarden doesn't split for him.
So I guess the question of what was the significance of the miracle is much more important when you know that you can cross it without.
Well, but where you can't, like maybe they weren't in the spot.
I was going to say
there's spots that are.
Or
narrower.
Of the year.
Right.
Good. So they are going to describe the Yarden as being full to overflowing, which makes sense because it's the spring, the snow melt or whatever else you have, whatever runoff you have from the year's rain, is engorging the Yarden. Nonetheless, the sense of the Mefarshim is that this was not necessary. Mm-hmm. This was done for show. It wasn't done because otherwise they weren't going to be able to make it across. So, starting with the first pasuk, because it's a good place to start. They spent 30 days mourning for Moshe. According to Rashi, that brings us to the 6th of Nisan. In other words, like we say with Avelus in general, with mourning in general, the last day is only a partial day. So the last day is the morning of the 6th of Nisan. Then you have 3 days, and that was the period with the spies, and Yehoshua is sort of waiting. Are they going to come back? Are they not going to come back? And it's now the morning of the 9th of Nisan. They're still camped in a place called Shittim, which we had talked about, the place that was associated with the sin with the daughters of Moab. Yehoshua, as we'll see here, is going to rise early in the morning. Take a look at Pasuk Aleph. Vayashkem Yehoshua baboker. Yehoshua got up early in the morning. Vayisu meha Shittim. They camped from this place of Shittim. Vayavohu ad hayarden. And they came to the Jordan. Hu v'chol b'nei Yisrael. Yehoshua, along with the rest of the Jews, Vayalinu Sham Terem Yavoru, and they rested there before they would cross. What strikes you as interesting in this pasuk? Don't tell me nothing, because I'm seeing a couple of things here that stand out.
Who the Kohen Yisrael?
Right. What does that say? So, what does that say to you? It's definitely an odd phrase.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it almost makes it sound like they weren't unified. Like it was him and Bnei Yisrael.
Him and Bnei Yisrael. It sort of sounds like when Moshe actually gets the Jews to leave after Yom Suf. Right? Mm-hmm. So it says that Moshe sort of pulls everybody along. They don't want to leave. The Egyptian gold is there. Whatever the reason is. But that that's the sound of this. Yeshua got up early in the morning. By the way, the getting up early in the morning is interesting in its own right. That's a trait that we associate with the greatest leaders, like Abraham is described as getting up early in the morning to daven to Hashem, with the various purposes for which he does that. But Yeshua gets up early in the morning. Vayisu mehashitim. And here it's plural, right?
So they
left Shittim. They came to the Yarden, him and the Jews. It sounds to me like really Yehoshua is the trigger. Yehoshua is the one who's making everything happen. Yehoshua gets up early in the morning and then they move.
Well, it's showing his kind of leadership, right? It's a new role for him.
Right.
They just got up from
Right. No, I think that's true. And I think
it's kind of acknowledging that he is now leading them as opposed to just everyone.
Right. And it's that they're looking to him to do that.
Right.
They're waiting for him. They want to see, okay, what is this fellow going to do? Mm-hmm. The
shows the way.
Yeah. They're putting their faith in Yehoshua. Yehoshua's going to go. Okay, so we're all going to go along. And we'll see where it takes us.
But in the placement of it is funny. Like, it's after... Like, it already switched the plural.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, it's singular, plural, plural, and then it says who the plural is.
Right.
And then it continues plural.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Without doubt, it's odd. It's like it's trying to, it's calling attention to itself by putting
it. Also, kol b'nei Yisrael is also odd, right? Not just the b'nei Yisrael, but, like, all
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Well, that's showing the unity that they're all following him.
Right.
Like, they're all behind him, or they're all on the same.
I'm also wondering...
Is it a big distance from Shittim to the edge of the Yarden? That it took the whole day? Is that because they slept there? You know, it sounds like.
Right. The answer is I don't know, and particularly when you're talking about having a couple of million people traveling.
That's right.
The so I
only get so far.
Yeah. My impression is that Shittim is close.
So I thought it was right. Yeah. I was right at the.
Because Moab is supposed to be camped right on the river. That's where Moab lives, and that's Shittim is Moab.
No, but they also, I mean, it's not just that they only knew that they slept overnight, because it looks like they're staying there for 3 days, so it's not, right, so it's not necessarily that they just got there overnight and they're sleeping overnight before they continue.
So where do you think the 3 days happens?
Doesn't say right there, but you can say right afterwards. Yeah. Right?
So the question is, what is this 3 days from?
What, yeah.
Oh.
It's a good question.
Like they get to the Yarden and then they stay there for 3 days. Yeah.
So it seems like the 3 days that we're referring to are actually the retroactive 3 days since the end of since the end of Moshe's Avelus. That's usually the way this is taken. Because otherwise the chronology is very difficult.
So they left after 3 days and went from Shittim to Isias.
Exactly. Okay. But in terms of the reference to them leaving Shittim and coming to the Yarden, we have other places in Tanakh where you place an emphasis not only on the place they left, but also the place they went to, in order to indicate, sometimes it's, if you think of like the story with Yaakov leaves Beersheba, goes to Haran, and the point is the impact of his departure on Beersheba and on his arrival in Haran. Here we don't know anything really about the impact of their leaving Shittim or arrival at the Yarden, but the answer could be that it's meant to say they remain in the same mode the entire time. In other words, they left Shittim following Yehoshua, with faith in Yehoshua, and they arrive at the Yarden still with their faith in Yehoshua intact. Meaning that nothing's changed yet. It's a possibility. Given that it's only one day, I'm not sure I would have expected anything to change, but that's
and also given suggestion. That they're not really doing anything but traveling, they're not coming to, you know, into the enemy land, they're not, you know, like crossing into the river yet, like at that point.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, it's true that they're not that all they're doing is traveling. But first of all, Jews can get in trouble just sitting still. We've seen that. That's number one. But number two, they are getting close to enemy territory.
Yeah, but what I think it's like that border of the Yarden is sort of still safe. Once you cross it, that's your, like, you know, stepping into.
But there could be a lot of then, you know, people saying, "Why are we doing this? Look what's out there."
Yeah.
So they don't even know that. The spies went and came back and said,
"Right, you know,
it's in. You know, we're going to get the land. Like, what did you say? The delivered the land into our hands, or whatever. The people don't know that.
Yeah,
they don't know that they had.
I'm imagining
go their way.
Yeah, I'm imagining. But I'm thinking about this in the same way that, like, if you ever deal with a kid who doesn't want to swim, right, who's just afraid of the water, so they don't go near the pool, right? Because who knows what could happen to me? So." as they're getting to the Yarden, with all of the enemy on the other side, right? And in their heads, they may be remembering what happened with the Meraglim and all these reports about, yeah, exactly. I'm wondering if that isn't the point. In other words, they didn't balk. Mm-hmm. They go right up to the Yarden following Yahushua. Maybe that's the message here.
Maybe they thought, oh, we're not going so fast. There's a river here, you know.
Maybe.
I know I might have missed this, but how do we have a sense of how many Nesvil there were there at this point?
Yeah, so we don't really know. The last census we have puts the number of men of military age at a little over 600,000. So that's what we usually assume. It's at least a couple of million.
That's unbelievable.
Yes, and for many people, that's literally unbelievable.
That's really
In terms of the number. Right. Because keep in mind, not just the difficulty of imagining them crossing, but how does Yahushua speak to them?
Right. How does he speak to them?
Yeah,
it must be
broken.
And you get like broken telephone as the messages get sent from one end of the tribe to the other.
They must stay with their tribe.
And they have a structure of leadership.
I was going to say, they have their...
Right. That Moshe set up originally.
To the leadership, and the leaders then go down. Yeah.
But it's a lot of physical space, like 2 million people.
How do you communicate? There's no cell phones. You know, like, how do you communicate? Like, the person at the back.
Right.
Right. Like, and the answer is you require a very decentralized system. You know, in the sense that you have to be able to communicate to so-and-so who's going to communicate to so-and-so. There has to be a certain degree of... there has to be some degree of latitude for the lower level leaders to deal with issues, because you can't bring them all back to the ocean, right? So you know, you can imagine a scenario in which somebody from Shevet Zevulun, you know, broke his foot and now he's, you know, not able to go along, but you're going to hold up everybody, because so there has to be some way of resolving problems and dealing with issues such that it's not all coming back to Yahushua to handle it. And in terms of his communication, we're actually going to get to it. I don't know if we'll get to it today, but the Midrashim try to tackle this also and offer a suggestion for it. So the Jews are now camped at the Yarden, and now it's time for them to get instructions. So let's take a look at Psukim Bet to Hey. I'll look at them as a block. It is at the end of 3 days, meaning those original 3 days, 6th to 9th of Nisan. And the officers, we don't know who the officers were, passed through the camp. We've had references to Shotrim off and on since they left Mitzrayim. These are some officials who have been designated. Perhaps they go back to the ones that Moshe appointed at Yisro's suggestion, when they had the Sarei Alafim and Sarei Meot, the people who are in charge of, you know, different groups of the Jews. But they pass through the camp. Vayitzavu, sentence 3, Vayitzavu es ha'am le'mor kiroschem es aron b'ris Hashem Elokechem. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of Hashem your God, v'akohanim ha'levi'im nos'im oso, and the Kohanim, the Levi'im, are carrying it. We'll have to come back to that phrase. V'atem tis'u mimekomchem, then you, the nation, leave your place, and follow the Aron. So he says, the Kohanim Leviim, whatever those are carrying the Aron. They're going first. You're following the Aron. Ah, but, there should be a distance of ke alpayim ama in measure. Ke alpayim. How do your Tanakhs translate ke alpayim?
About
2,000.
A measure of cubit.
Interesting. So right. So the Koran version of it is that it's about 2,000. The Or Scroll version of it is a measure of 2,000. So we have to come back to that and figure out what that is. Why you have two different explanations of the prefix ke. We'll see. Al tikrivu elav. Don't get close to the Aron. Leman asher tidu es haderach asher telchu va, so that you will know the path you will walk. Kilo avartem baderach mitmol shilshom, because you haven't been here before. You weren't here yesterday. You weren't here the day before. So, by the way, you might want to watch for instructions. Just wait one more pasuk, and then we can ask all our questions about this, because there's a lot here that isn't clear. Vayomer Yehoshua el ha'am. Yehoshua now says to the nation, Hiskadashu. Hiskadashu is a funny word. I'm curious to see how you're going to take this one also. What is
sanctify yourself.
It says prepare yourself.
Actually. Ah, good. So the Art Scroll says prepare yourselves. The Koran one says sanctify yourselves. Right, well, instinct would be Hiskadashu, Kedusha, sanctify. But I would actually go with the earth scroll on this one for reasons that we'll see. Ki machar yasa Hashem bekir bechem nifla os, because tomorrow God is going to perform wonders in your midst. Okay. What bothers us about these psukim? What doesn't bother us about these psukim?
I mean, well, first of all, just the basic of, like, how is the whole nation supposed to see the one little Aron being carried and follow it? Like, you know, especially if they have to have a 2,000 cubit, you know, distance between them. I mean, the people back in Zebulun are not seeing the Aron in the front.
Mm-hmm. Ostensibly true.
Like, yeah.
Right. Also, so much focus on not, like, going near it or passing it. Like, so I was saying, what are the chances they're going to pass it? I mean, like, they're right. All behind. So what, right. Like the first three people might be able to run
ahead. Well, where does it say not to go in front of it?
Oh, I mean, well, it says
come here.
Didn't it go in the middle?
Oh, sorry. If it went in the middle, then it just, it could be cubits, whatever, how many cubits.
Oh, around
it. Then how do the people in front of it now?
So Ruth's point is one we're going to come back to, that in fact the Aron, when they're in the wilderness, travels in the middle of the nation.
How does it direct them?
So that actually may be the key to understanding the sentence. And what Yoshua is trying to accomplish.
Does that have to be literally 2,000 amot, or maybe just an expression to say don't go close to it? Right. Like, you know, not precisely that amount, but, you know.
Well, that so might be why the kid is there.
That will fit with saying Kal Paya means about
it. Well, okay, so just don't go close, like around, you know.
You know, cars, you're driving,
that's the usual.
Yeah, one block in front, and then one block in
front. But we're not the deck is exactly that amount. Just,
but then
you know,
it says... Maybe. Because you won't know the way, so like, and you haven't been there before, so it's like, well, they haven't been anywhere before, right? So why is it now saying you won't know the way when they left Egypt and they didn't know the way then either?
So we've now established that we know nothing about Pasuk Dalet. What about Pasuk Hey?
That's Pasuk.
Well, actually, we didn't resolve Gimel yet either, right? Gimel, he says, the Kohen and Leviim are going to carry it. So we have to come back to what that phrase
is. Well, it says follow it. How are you supposed to follow it if you're in front of it?
Who's in front of it?
If
there is a square.
If it's in, right.
Correct.
Right. Because then they don't know the way, so how can they?
So
maybe it wasn't a square anymore, maybe it was on three sides.
But if it's, right, then they're not supposed to, if it's a square, then it doesn't make sense. And if it's not a square, then they're not supposed to pass it, because they have to follow it.
Right. So what's the problem? So that's
no problem.
Okay,
why
so
are two different people talking? Like, what's the difference between what the Shochrim are saying versus what? I mean, there's a difference in what they're saying, but why could the Shochrim not give the whole message? Like, what was the importance of Yeshua giving that specific part of the message?
Right. So all of this is difficult. Let's see what we can do with it.
Can I ask you one thing? It's small compared to in my Tanakh. I don't know if you call it. It's called Uvanav, and then it's got in brackets, and it's spelled with a yod. The first time it says Uvanav with a nun vav, and then it's got Uvanav
Right. And the answer is that the yud, they're telling you that it's chaser, that it's written without the yud in a cloth. Mm-hmm. In a parchment like the traditional text, it's written without the yud, so they're giving you the tip off to that. Is there significance to it?
Isn't that an unusual way of spelling it without the vav?
Without the yud.
Without the yud?
Yes. Yes.
So, does it have a different meaning if you have it that way? Or
not really. Because, I mean, you can read things any way you like. Meaning, you could read it as ubeno, but it wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
The ubeno would mean the same thing as ubenav.
Right.
For our purposes here. So, yeah, I'm not sure that it would add anything, the fact that it's written there without the yud, as much as it's simply a heads up, hey, in a cloth, this is written without the yud. Yeah, I don't know of any particular point on it. So let's first look at this Pasuk Gimel, right? In Pasuk Gimel, the Kohanim Leviim. So I referenced for you on your sheet in source number one, a Pasuk in Bamidbar, in which we're told who is supposed to carry the Aron.
Are Levim, that's the truth. I mean, they're all from Levi, right?
Right.
All, well, I say it now, they're all descendants of Levi.
Right, so that's part of the question also. Right? One question is why are they carrying the aro, and the other question is why are we calling them Kohanim Levitim?
Yeah.
But in terms of what you have there, Zahava, it says there that the B'nai Kahat have the job of carrying the aro, right? The Kodesh of the Kelav, I think, is the phrase. So it doesn't actually mention the aro, I think, in that pasuk, but it says that which is sacred is for Kahat. What happens is, remember the way the families work, right, from Levi? There are three sons. There's Gershon, Kahat, and Merari.
Yeah.
And then Kahat has four kids, Amram, Yitzhar, Hebron, and Uziel. And then Amram, of course, has Miriam, Aharon, Moshe. So Kohanim are the subset of a subset of a subset of Shevet Levi. But of those three main branches, Gershon, Kahat, and Merari, each one has a different job when taking care of the travels of the Mishkan. And Kahat is the one that's supposed to carry the Kodesh. They're the ones who should be carrying the Aron. But it's the Levim in Kahat. It's not the Kohanim. Normally the Kohanim don't do that. So that's already a red flag. So Rashi here says, yeah, that happens. I'm mixing up two things in my own notes. There are two separate matters. First of all, why are we calling them Kohanim Levim? And then second, the question of why are the Kohanim carrying?
Okay, okay.
So in terms of why the Kohanim are called Kohanim Levim, Rashi says, don't worry about it. Because it happens in Tanakh from time to time. We do see the phrase, HaKohanim HaLevim, which is true. I think actually, in the Haftarah the Shabbos from Yechezkel for Parshas Emor, you're going to see it, you'll see it there, that they're called the Kohanim, the beginning of the Haftarah is HaKohanim HaLevim. So watch for that the Shabbos, and you can tell people, hey, that happens in Yeshua also. But one of the arachim we used to have, Hillel Horovitz. Remember Hillel?
No.
Okay. Well, you know Hillel.
Oh, right. Okay.
So Hillel actually wrote an article on this for Toronto Torah a couple of years ago, in which he had a brilliant idea. I don't know if it was his or if he was quoting anybody, but let's assume it was his. But take a look at source number 2. It's a pasuk towards the end of the Chumash, specifically Moshe's bracha to the tribe of Levi. It should start with the word Yoru, I think. 33:10. Right? So look at this pasuk and what it tells you about Levim. What are Levim supposed to do?
The Torah.
Well, start from the beginning of the pasuk though. Yorumish Patechel Yaakov
Esaras Chali Yisrael.
Teach the Torah.
Right. And do the Sabbath.
Right. So the first half of it is they should teach Torah to the Jews. And the second half of it is Kitares and Karbanos, the offerings in the Beis HaMikdash. So what Hillel suggested is that there are in fact two different roles. Working in the Beis HaMikdash is a Kohen role. Because Levim can't do that. No one else can do that. It's just the Kohen. Teaching, though, we associate with Shevet Levi as a whole. It's not exclusive to the Kohanim. So sometimes they're functioning as Kohanim, and sometimes they're functioning as Levim. That's the idea that he puts forth. Remember, that pasuk is talking to Shevet Levi as a whole. It's not talking to the Kohanim in particular. So when the Kohanim are called HaKohanim HaLevim, the point is to emphasize their Levi side, the teaching role, which means that what they are doing here, applying that idea to this, is there's some kind of pedagogic element to what they're doing with the Aron. It's not simply a ritual of service to the Aron, where we are the carriers of the Aron, but it's actually we are teaching the Jews something. Something is meant to be learned from what they're doing. What is supposed to be learned, we have to see. But that's, I think, a good point. Second, though, why are they carrying it in the first place? So there's a lot of side discussion in this, which I didn't go into on your sheets because I thought it would just confuse me. But there's a whole discussion about which Aron this was. Meaning it's not clear whether they had one Aron or whether they had two Aronot. Because at one point you find the creation of the Aron for the Mishkan, and at a separate point you find Hashem telling Moshe to make an Aron. So it's not clear how many Aronot you had and whether you had one Aron and then what did you do because you have the Luchos and then you have the broken original set, or whether you had one that held one set and one that held the other, how that exactly worked. But I didn't want to go into all that here. It gives me a headache. But if you look at the Abarbanel in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, he has a discussion about it. The greater piece here is the fact that the Kohanim are carrying the Aron at all. Because it's really not, as we saw in the first source, in the Pasuk from Bamidbar, it's the job of Kehath. So the Kohanim shouldn't be doing this. In fact, this is foreshadowed in Parshas Vayelech. If you take a look at Devarim Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Tet. Hanosim es Aron Bris Hashem. Exactly. He gives it to the Kohanim B'nei Levi. Right? Moshe writes down the Torah, and he gives it to the Kohanim B'nei Levi, who carry the Aron of the Covenant of Hashem. So it sounds like already over there, even though they haven't done so. It's a foreshadowing of what's happening here. But take a look on your sheets now at source number 3. Source number 3 is Gemara in Sota, which observes, B'shlosha mekomos nasu Kohanim es Aron. There are actually 3 places where Kohanim carry the Aron. Kisha'aru is Hayardin, when they cross the Jordan. Ukshayisibo is Yericho, when they circumnavigate Yericho. Remember, walking around the walls and that whole story. And Ukshayachaziruhu limikomo, after the Plishtim get the Aron, when it's brought back, then they use the Kohanim to carry the Aron. Those 3 places. What is common between all 3?
It was all connected with Goyim.
Well, Yericho, there are no...
It was in order to break the walls of Yericho.
Okay, and here?
To conquer the Canaan, right? And the Palestine, it was...
That's interesting.
Away from Palestine. I'm not sure about.
I'm not sure I would go with that. But what else can you do with this?
All of Israel, all together?
They're all miracles. Mm-hmm. Right? The miracle here with the Yardin, the miracle with Yericho and the walls collapsing, and then with the Plishtim, where they send it back with the cows and it's brought back independently. That's the miracle there. Mm-hmm. So these are all miracles, so it's sort of a signal to the nation, God's going to do something cool now. Right, there's going to be something impressive happening at this stage. It's also unique, as Ruth pointed out, in that the Aron is in front instead of being in the middle. There's actually debate about this in terms of how they traveled in the Midbar. But Rashi's view is that they traveled as a square with the Aron in the middle, and so that's the way he helps us understand Pasuk Dalet. When the Pasuk says, you're going to keep 2,000 amos. We have to still discuss precise or not precise, but you're going to keep 2,000 amos between yourself and the Aron. Don't go close to it, so that you will know the path that you are going to travel, meaning you'll be guided by the Aron so that you'll know the path you are to travel, because you haven't been here. What he's actually trying to do is not to justify the 2,000 amos. You could travel closer to the Aron and still be guided by the Aron. You don't need to be at a distance for that purpose. The goal of being at a distance behind it is simply the goal of explaining this to the Jews, saying, because you haven't been here before, is meant to explain why the Aron is at the front at all. Because that's something you haven't seen before. And what he's saying is, the Aron is at the front because none of you can be at the front. Gad is theoretically at the front, and we're going to see that later on in these Prakim. The tribe of Gad goes in front because they're supposed to be the warriors. But if you put Gad at the front, they could end up who knows where. You need to have the Aron in front, because the Aron is going to tell them which way is east. That's the idea.
You mean you can't see it? You just can't go do just. You can't go due west. Like, you can't just, you don't see the other side. Is it so hard to figure out where to go?
Or whatever, you know
what I'm saying? Like, you can't tell?
Well, the question is, are they supposed to go to just, wherever you go, just as long as you end up crossing the yard?
I'm saying, like, is it so hard to cross the yard? Right.
Right. I think the idea is that there is a particular path which we're going to see that they follow in their conquests, and that's what they're supposed to be working with here.
Is the particular path laid out, like, does Yoshua actually know where they're going, or is it that the Aharon is actually, like, the coin not even, like, let's say, carrying the Aharon, that they're leading it, but that it's leading them somewhere, that it's the one that who is directing them, and therefore everybody has to follow it, because nobody knows where they're going unless they're following it.
Right, so to my mind, it's that.
Like that miracle of the actual Aharon leading them.
Right. To my mind, that's what's going on. It's not that Yoshua knows. We've never seen Yoshua told anything. To my mind, this is, in fact, the Aharon is leading them, and that's the lesson the Kohanim are meant to teach the people. As we said, that the reason why the Kohanim are called Kohanim Levim is because this is a pedagogic moment. What are they teaching? They're teaching them, you're following the Aharon. The Aharon is the one that's calling the shots.
But that's a big miracle. Like, is that Aharon, you know?
Like, it's like a Ouija board.
Is it, yeah, you know? Like, you know? Like,
yes.
But you programmed it to say where you want to go.
Right.
And it doesn't always lead you the right way.
But that to me is what's going on here, and why the pasuk emphasizes you haven't gone this route before, and that's why we're going to be doing this in this bizarre way. Because one other thought that goes along with this is the fact that Yoshua has never taken them from point A to point B before. So imagine that, right? We have this new fellow take over.
And where is he, though?
He knows.
And he says, I don't know where to go.
We don't know yet.
You don't know where he is. And there's a million people there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two million. I don't know where to go.
Oh, not only does he say, I don't know where we're going, not just that, but it's like he put his shoes on the wrong feet, right? Because for 40 years, we've been traveling in the Midbar, and we traveled in this formation, and now the new guy comes, and suddenly we're traveling in a line. Like, does he not know?
Where did Rashi get that from the word
overall?
How does he get that this was in a...
Line.
Oh, well, because it says. Because it says, down. Go behind. How do you do that if they're in a square? And also, when they were in the square, the arm was in the middle. Mm-hmm. So it's very clear that they're kind of formation behind.
In the meat bar, how they know where to go?
So you had the clouds. Remember, the cloud picks up and goes.
The cloud was in front of
them. That was actually no more cloud leading them. That's correct. And not only that, in the Midbar, the cloud was 3 days in front of them.
Mm-hmm. 3 days?
Yes, 3 days trip in front of them. So the cloud gets going, and you, from a distance, see the cloud.
See the cloud.
So foul. Did the cloud stop when
it didn't rain?
Sorry?
The
cloud is in the merit of Aharon, as I recall. The cloud is in Aharon's merit. So when Aharon dies, the Be'er, the water, was Miriam's. The cloud was Aharon's. Which is why, after Miriam dies in Chukas, the Jews say, hey, we have no water, and Moshe ends up hitting the rock. And after Aharon dies, then they're suddenly scared because the Canaanim see them, and Canaanim are going to fight with them because the cloud had been protection for them. The cloud and the water return in Moshe's merit. When Moshe dies, they lose all three. They will see what's going on with the mud. We're not up to that yet. But the cloud is gone, and it would appear the water is gone also at this stage. So yeah, they're in trouble.
But like 2 million people in a straight line, like how long did that take?
It's 3 days.
No, the 3 days was before.
I know. So
they're not in a straight line.
They're around. You don't know how wide this formation is.
Right. That's true.
It's like the length of the Earth.
Yeah, it's very wide. I mean, right. 2 million people.
Well, no.
And bathroom stops.
You could actually do the math on this, meaning that they have, you know,
like
person per square meter ways that they calculate these things. It's worth noting. Wow. Take a look at it.
No, I mean, when you just look at these demonstrations and things, where there's a few thousand people, it's overwhelming.
Go to the Y for Israel when there's 10,000 people, right?
Yeah. And how long does that take to get out of the
right?
Way?
You see how this one's fast and that one's slow and there's gaps and there's this and then you multiply that.
I know, they should bring their scooters. My kids used to do those really big creative scooters.
They didn't have the scooter option. That wasn't there.
They're kind of wet too.
So the Kohanim here are carrying, and we're doing this in this odd formation with the Aharon in front. Radak also adds a separate note regarding the Kohanim carrying. If you take a look at source number 4. Radak suggests that it's actually to show, hey, something different is happening here. He says, Ad ata ha-levim ha-yunos im ha-aron. Till now the Levim carried the Aron. Be'ata nasu ha-kohanim. But now the Kohanim did it la-hakdisho yoser mipnei ha-nes shana salafanavata. Now the Kohanim carried it in order to sanctify it more than normal because of the miracle that's now going to happen. Okay. As far as the 2,000 Amos, so the truth is that there's a debate among the Rishonim as to how to understand the 2,000 Amos. According to Ralbag, the 2,000 is a minimum, meaning at least 2,000 Amos. And the point is, when you had a cloud, or when you had a pillar of flame, so it's very visible. The Aron is hard to see. So therefore, you want to have this space in between to maximize the number of people who can actually see the Aron. That's the way Ralbag takes it. So it's at a minimum of 2,000 Amos. Rashi, quoting the Medrash, says it's a maximum.
How much is 2,000
Amos? About a kilometer.
Oh. But it's a far. Small thing, like the farther back you are, you can't even see it, and then the people behind you, there's no way. Whereas,
I would
assume it's not a big cloud, you're right, but it's high up.
It is raised
high
up.
It's being carried by people. How high up can they be?
It is raised up, but it's not alone. It's being carried by a group, and I suppose you have to follow the group.
A big circle around the globe. I know.
You also have to hope this is a wilderness.
You know,
if
there's any variation, if it's not downhill, like if it's
I keep in mind the Midrashim note the implication of various Pesukim is that the Aron actually flattened hills.
Oh,
Get in the way of the Aron.
Okay.
So that would definitely help. Mm-hmm. If only because you could see the Aron shaped hole in that certain hill.
Right.
It's
also easier to carry if you're not going over terrain.
Well, keep in mind they're not really carrying the Aron anyway.
Right.
Because the Aron doesn't need to be carried. The Aron carries its bearers.
And it's not like 100 people are carrying it. There's only so many.
Well, you actually have. We'll see the escorts.
What do you mean? It could be a lot of people.
How many people carry it? No, but at one time,
the Aron is not carried technically. The Aron floats.
So you're saying, oh, there are Kohanim, though. So who gets to be the one next to the Aron?
Right.
Is it hierarchy and Kohanim?
Probably. I would guess so. But it's also, you'll see that there's an escort also. Like, it's not just the Aron itself. But Rashi's view is entirely different. Rashi says, you actually need to make sure that there are some people who will be within 2,000 Amos. It's a maximum. That you can't have more than that as the space between the Aron and the people. Not that all the people have to be within this, but there have to be some people. Not because of this point in time, but because when you get to Yericho, you're going to be there over Shabbos. You're there for a week. So they need to be able to get close to the Aron, to Daven, as we'll see when we have the whole Yericho war. And you can't because of the problem of Tchum. Right? The rule is you can't travel more than 2,000 Amos outside of your settled area on Shabbos.
So that's the actual measurement.
Right. So that's the measure for Tchum, correct. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you have to make sure that you're close enough to the Aron, or else no one can actually go to the Aron on Shabbos.
What about, because they're so big, even if the people on the inside are close, those people on the outside might be more than 2,000.
Their camp continues. In the same way that here, I can travel.
It's okay once you're within the camp.
Right.
It's just the empty space.
My 2,000 Amos do not start at my house. Mm-hmm. My 2,000 Amos start at the boundary of the city.
Okay.
So, yes.
Is that the source for the Tchum Shabbos, actually?
Tchum Shabbos is actually problematic in terms of the source, meaning that the source is the camp of the Jews. The question is where do we really get 2,000? Is 2,000 a derabbanan that's associated with it?
But is this the only really place that mentions a 2,000 number?
Oh, no. We have that already back in the Torah, the dimensions of the cities. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that we have. So the idea here is either 2,000 as the minimum or a maximum, and you have to debate, which you've already noted between the commentaries, as to whether 2,000 is a round number or whether 2,000 means 2,000, which may depend on whether I take Ralbag or I take Rashi. In other words, if Rashi is saying you have to be within the 2,000, it's 2,000. That's not a number you can play with. Whereas if it's simply a statement of at least 2,000, so you know, if someone's 1998, it's not a big deal. So there are different ways that you can look at it. Barbanel throws in an entirely separate idea that they should make sure to be 2,000 Amos away in order to perceive the miracle better of what happens with the Aron in the Yarden, because otherwise the people up close are going to see, and no one else is going to see what happened. Also, it's going to show that the why the Yarden splits, it's split for the Arum, but that's a discussion we have to get to yet. So that's the initial set of instructions from the Shoftim, right? From the Shodrim, I should say. The Shodrim tell them, let the Aron go ahead of you. So the Aron is going to leave its spot in the center of the camp, carried by the Kohanim. Then the people are going to follow, and you're going to do it in a line. We have to be missing something here, because he didn't say, like, okay, first is going to be Zvulun, and then it's going to be Naphtali, and then it's going to, like...
Just get into a line.
Yeah. I mean, we do know that in the Midbar, there were camps of three Shvatim each, and that each camp had its order in which it went. But even working with that, you've got three Shvatim per...
Didn't Reuven, Gad, and Menashe, like, lead them? Weren't they the ones saying, we're going to lead?
So, we'll get to that. It's a good question. We have to get there. The Yehoshua then takes over in Pasuk Hay. And he says to them, either sanctify yourselves or prepare yourselves, because tomorrow God is going to perform miracles in your midst. Why is Yehoshua taking over? I think this is a key lesson here.
The Shotri now.
Yeah. I think there's a key point here.
Well, he's
Yeah, but
also,
why now?
Anything that's happening, like that Hashem is, like that obviously came from Hashem. Like somebody, Hashem had to tell somebody, I'm going to do a miracle, right? So to show them that he's the one who's speaking to Hashem, he's the one who's relaying the information.
Except that what they were told by the Shoftim also presumably came
from God. But that was more logistical.
Necessarily, that could be logistical. It doesn't necessarily have to have come from God. But saying, I'm going to do miracles, has to have come from God.
Except that saying that the Kohanim are going to be the ones to do this instead of the Levium, and that we're going to change our formation, better be a divine message. Otherwise, you can't do that.
Right. He's also only speaking to a small portion, right? Isn't he only speaking to... Well, he said it's the people, but he's really...
In Pasuk Vav, he's going to speak to the Kohen. But in Pasuk Hey, he seems to be addressing the nation, however that's done. Ruth, are you going to say something?
No.
So, what I would look at, and I think Roberta was starting to say this also, is that it's a difference between logistical and sort of morale. In other words, the Shotrim can take care of technical information. You'll go in this order, and the Kohen, we're going to do this, and you're going to do that. But the statement of, okay, miracles are coming, that's the leader's job. His role is more than the technical, it's about morale.
But the Kohanim is all technical. Carry the ark and pass it by people.
So we have to see that. We have to get to that. I'm not there yet.
Okay.
I'm hoping that I'll do that possibly next week. You'll have forgotten this by then. We'll see. We have to figure out what it is that he tells them, the Kohanim there. But he says to them, Hiskadashu. Hiskadashu. So Mitzudas David, which is one of the classic commentaries on this, and usually is very simple and pshat-oriented, says, Hiskadashu means sanctify yourselves. How do you sanctify yourself? Separate from Tumah. Don't go near anything Tameh. Straightforward. Rashi and Radak, though, give a different explanation. If you take a look at source number 5, Radak writes, Tihyu mezumanim la'avor, be prepared to cross. V'achinu kleichem v'chol divreichem, prepare your implements, prepare all of your matters, whatever you have to do, get it done.
It's like pack? Like what does that mean?
It's the washroom?
Yeah. Well, it's more than just pack. It's make yourself ready for the purpose of experiencing a miracle.
Which is how? Like, how does someone do that?
That's
right. Like,
that's
the sanctifier. That's
like, separate yourself from Tumah.
And these are all potential answers. Go to Mikvah, it would have been my explanation of what Hiskadashu meant.
How did they have a...
Yeah, how did they have a...
Okay, that's another separate...
Well, if you have the well, if you have the water in general, then you've got that. Take a dip in the Yarden before crossing. And all through, when we've had references to using water, it's always been water that came from the rock. That was always what they had. But in terms of what's going on here, remember that the root, kuf dalet shin, doesn't just mean holiness. It means something that is dedicated for a specific function. Anything that's dedicated for a particular purpose is kodesh. So to use the opposite extreme, a kadesha in the Torah is somebody who's dedicated for promiscuity, basically. There's a Kadesh is the male, Kadesha is the female, it's using the same root, Kuf Dalet Shin, as Kedusha, Beis HaMikdash, and so on, because it just means something dedicated for a particular purpose. So what he's saying to them is, you're about to experience a miracle, you better get focused. That's the idea here. That's what he's conveying, according to Rashi and Radak. One last point on this. God never told him this. Meaning, God never told him it was going to be a miracle.
God never told him.
Well, we don't see. We don't see him
telling him to do the formation differently, to have the Levian, the Kohanim carry that. Like, we don't see any of that.
How did he know? How could he?
He must have told him.
So this is the problem, right? So the Radak suggests an interesting solution. Radak suggests that God told him in the first parak to cross the Yarden, and everybody can see that it's full and overflowing. So he figures, okay, God must have something planned. He doesn't really want to soak everybody, you know, by having them just walk through the Yarden. So he just assumed, okay, it must be miracles coming. Malbim suggests that God did tell him, although I'm not clear where, that the Kohanim should carry the Aron. And when God telling him Kohanim should do that,
it says in the next few Sukkim, maybe that's just like the chronology's off. Like it starts in Pasuk Zion already. Hashem tells Moshe, Hashem tells Yeshua, and we see it.
Right, but then the question would be why report it after? Yeah. So the upshot of everything we've seen here, and we got through 5 Sukkim, so hooray. That's fine. But the upshot of everything here is that Yahushua has the trust of the people. He gets up and goes. The people follow suit. The Kohanim here step forward as educators, as Kohanim HaLeviim, to carry the Aron, signaling that some kind of miracle is going to happen. Yahushua is the morale booster for the nation, telling them, yes, a miracle is coming. And what I think is an interesting point in its own right, really deserves its own expansion at some point, is this idea that the nature of holiness, the nature of Hiskadashu, is in the preparation. It's in the way that one prepares beforehand. Meaning, Kedusha is not in the actual moment and activity. Kedusha is in the way that you get ready for it. Which I think is an important point that we're giving short shrift of right now, but maybe at some other point we'll get a chance to talk about that more. But I think that's a key understanding of Kedusha. So next week, God willing, we will have the Kohanim actually get moving in Pasuk Vav, and more to see, much more.
It's like kind of like 12.